Revolutions Per Minute is a weekly radio show from the New York City chapter of the Democratic Socialists of America, recorded live at WBAI 99.5 in Brooklyn every Tuesday at 5. RPM is about doing the work to build a democratic socialist future. Every week, hear the latest news, analysis, and organizing experience from the minds and hearts of activists fighting every day in NYC. Join the movement at socialists.nyc.
Hello out there in New York City. You're listening to Revolutions Per Minute, a socialist radio show and podcast from members of the New York City Democratic Socialists of America. I'm Amy Wilson. I'm a DSA member and organizer, and this show is Healthcare at the Intersections. And thanks, Reggie, for the introduction. We are definitely not owned by Comcast. Our fight for universal healthcare is at a crossroads. What does advocating for universal healthcare mean for us as people, as workers, and as organizers in a modern intersectional left movement? That's the question that we'll be discussing throughout this show today. We'll be discussing some modern advances in the fight for universal healthcare, some news headlines that you might have seen, as well as a brief update on a local union fight here in New York City that really cuts to the heart of this particular issue. But first, the headlines. Our daily headlines are brought to you by The Thorn, an incredible weekly newsletter by the New York City DSA Electoral Working Group covering local politics and radical activism. You can subscribe to The Thorn at thethorn.nyc.
Yo, what's good, New York? This is Jack Devine with Revolutions Per Minute's headlines brought to you by The Thorn. Mayor de Blasio tapped Vicky Binn to be the new deputy mayor for housing and economic development. Binn formerly served as commissioner for the NYC Department of Housing Preservation and Development from 2014 to 2017, when she helped draft the mayor's Housing New York plan. In her new role, Binn will oversee NYCHA and the NYC Economic Development Corporation. Will the new housing czar actually do anything to stem real estate capital's war against working people in this city, in which 100 people are evicted every single day? That's up to whether the working class can build their own independent institutions. The Moral March for Housing this Thursday in Harlem is a step in that direction. Find out more at NYCDSA on Twitter or at housingjusticeforall.org. After melting the minds of millions of Americans by piping Donald Trump's campaign rallies directly into their living rooms, multimillionaire CNN president Jeff Zucker allegedly wants to run for the mayor of New York in 2021. Is this just another ego trip by a rich white guy, or does Zucker sincerely want to bring his both sides approach to white nationalism to the mayor's office? Hopefully, we'll never find out. However, despite the corporate media and monopoly capital's onslaught against muckraking journalism, media workers are organizing and fighting back. A new nonprofit local news website called The City has finally launched, and it is dedicated to hard-hitting reporting that serves the people of New York. Additionally, the worker-owned anti-capitalist video production cooperative, Means TV, is joining forces with the Sunrise Movement to spread awareness of organizing for the Green New Deal. Here in RPM, you've heard a lot about NYC-endorsed candidate for Queens District Attorney, Tiffany Caban, and her campaign is gathering more momentum every day. She received the endorsements of Make the Road New York, Vocal NY, and Queens Councilmember Jimmy Van Brammer. She's continuing a consolidation of progressive and social support for a fight to end mass incarceration, the war on drugs, and racist law enforcement in Queens by making the borough a community-centered social justice model for the world. Meanwhile, her competition, Queens Borough President Melinda Katz, received over $250,000 in donations from the real estate industry since establishing her campaign for Queens DA last year. And we all know how much New York slumlords care about people having nice living conditions, whether that's behind bars or in a rat-infested apartment with no heat. In other electoral news, a red breeze swept through the Windy City last Tuesday, Chicago DSA-endorsed candidates won at least five, and in all likelihood, all six of their elections for aldermen. Socialists now outnumber Republicans on the Chicago City Council. Multiple DSA candidates also won their races in Wisconsin. Yet, class struggle wasn't just limited to the ballot box in Chicago this past week. After rejecting an unacceptable offer from management, Chicago Symphony Orchestra musicians continue to strike in their fight for secure retirement benefits. Additionally, after 18 days on strike, graduate and teaching assistants at the University of Illinois at Chicago won a raise of $2,550 over 3 years, reduced fees, cheaper health care, and a partial health care coverage for their dependents. Strikes not only work, they're contagious. Higher education labor actions are spreading across the country. Closer to home here in New York, the Union of Graduate Workers, Postdoctorates, and all faculty at Rutgers is threatening to strike for increased funding for the university and more just working conditions. A picket line of multiple unions surrounded the negotiations at the Paul Robeson Center, Campus Center earlier today. Teachers in general education also continue to organize against neoliberal austerity. 2,500 Sacramento teachers plan to strike this Thursday. And labor education actions are not just limited to the United States. Hundreds of thousands of Polish teachers launched a nationwide strike yesterday against the authoritarian right-wing government's chauvinistic welfareism that supports businesses and farmers while underfunding public education. Solidarity with all the workers of the world. Now, let's get back to some live action with Amy Wilson.
Oh, thanks, Jack Devine, for those headlines of the day, courtesy of The Thorn. For those of you just joining us, we are listening to Revolutions Per Minute on listener-sponsored WBAI in NYC, broadcasting at 99.5 FM and streaming on your favorite podcast app. Today we're here talking about healthcare at the intersections, taking a look at the fight for universal healthcare from a variety of angles. And I'd like to read a quote that guided our approach to the show today, and then I'll introduce my esteemed guest who's here in the studio with us. So the quote is from a sort of modern classic activist text. It's No Shortcuts by Jane McAlevey, a renowned labor organizer and a scholar. And she says, "The craft of organizing helps people connect the dots between the critical solidarity-affirming moment and the larger system it challenges." So we're looking at that from the perspective of advocating for universal healthcare, what that means, again, on the individual level for us as embodied workers and embodied people and as members of a larger movement in coalition with others. So to talk a bit today about how that plays out here in New York City and New York City DSA, I have my comrade, Emma Claire Foley. Hi, Emma. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
So Emma Claire Foley is a member of DSA of South Brooklyn. She recently joined the organizing committee of the New York City Citywide Healthcare Committee. So Emma Claire, before we jump into what we have to say about universal healthcare on the local, city, state, and national level, let's take a look at our union fight here in New York City. I'm referring, of course, to NYSNA, the New York State Nurses Association. You may have heard or may have seen, or if you're a regular listener of RPM, you certainly have heard about the ongoing union negotiations going on with our comrades in the hospitals. In private sector hospitals, of course. So we have a little man on the street segment recorded from those pickets. Was it at the pickets on February 13th? The informational pickets back in February. So let's hear that, and then we'll hear a bit about what's happened in the weeks since then. Reggie, can you help us out?
Nursing school, we took an oath. We took an oath that we would advocate for our patients no matter what. regardless of where they live or what they look like or what kind of insurance they have or any other factor, and we are committed to do that. But we cannot advocate for our patients behind these walls because they won't let us. We cannot protect our patients behind these walls because they won't let us, and that is why we are out here in the streets, because this is the only place that people seem to listen to reason. One day, everybody out here is going to need a nurse.
Yes.
And we are here to say, we want to save the profession. We want to rescue this healthcare system from this vicious corporate business model and bring back compassion and love and care and expertise. Of healthcare in America, and we will not stop fighting.
Well, NYSNA is demonstrating because they want a fair contract for their nurses, and there are certain staffing situations that they're against, and Sinai wants to push it down their throats, and they're not going to take it. But this is not unlike, I'm here from District Council 1707, showing solidarity with Neisner, because we're also fighting for parity with our daycare Head Start teachers and public school teachers. We have the same credentials, but we get paid thousands of dollars less. But it's important that we show solidarity with our sister unions, because in the end, we are fighting for the same thing, workers' rights and the integrity of workers, not to be abused by anyone, management or anyone. So that's why we are here. I think it will be a... I think solidarity like this will transfer into success. I believe that. It may take time, but this is what we have to do.
Yeah, totally. Amazing. How do you feel about this as part of a larger movement across the country towards health justice?
Oh, I believe it's important. Yeah. We have to have healthcare professionals along with the working class to struggle for that. We can't do it alone. We just can't. We have to have patients who are the working class people. We have to have the people who provide it. And despite what everyone says, and I'm not trying to demean what they do, doctors are very important. But who does the bulk of the work in the hospitals? Nurses. And so we have to make sure that they're taken care of properly because they have children, families to feed. All right, they want a decent life. They don't want the whole pie, but they want a fair share of the pie. I'm here supporting my wife. There's a nurse here at Mount Sinai, Andrea Mohan. And I'm here not just because she's my wife, but I would have been here if she wasn't my wife. Because I support unions. She's a union person. My daughter works for AFGE. My dad is a member of Local 6 here in New York City.
In the family.
So we are union people.
Yeah.
All right.
That's amazing. Thank you so
much.
Thank
you.
Here you go.
All right. So that was February 13th. Today is April 9th. What's happened in the NYSNA negotiations since then? Well, we have heard that negotiations were occurring last night, literally until 5 a.m. So our contacts in the nurses union are tired today and either working or recovering from those long, long negotiations. We have heard that there has been a tentative agreement that's been reached. We know that union membership will be voting soon on that agreement, and we want to let them know that we are in solidarity with their demands for safe staffing now, and we will be watching the ratification vote closely. Why is DSA there on the picket lines with NYSNA? Well, the answer is in the jingle that opens our show. It's solidarity. We are in support, as our comrade says, of the integrity of workers not to be abused by anyone. And I'm speaking for myself here. I'm not speaking on behalf of anything or anybody other than myself. But I did attend a party last week, an event last week, with some worker organizers from NYSNA, as well as some of my comrades from the labor branch of New York City DSA. And what I saw there and what I heard there reinforced to me that nurses are on the front lines of our fight for healthcare justice. They see the beating heart of capitalism. They are forced to make life and death decisions. And those life and death decisions become a lot more life and death when their staffing ratios are not appropriate to the needs of the workers. As care workers, we know that nurses are vulnerable to exploitation precisely based on their mission-driven approach to their work, similar to teachers. Nurses don't want to go on strike. They know that they have a responsibility to their patients, just like teachers don't want to go on strike. They know that they have a responsibility to their students. And nobody takes that more seriously than the workers themselves. But we also know that NYSNA voted to authorize a strike by a truly overwhelming margin. So as observers, we know that for that to have happened in a mission-driven profession like nursing, it speaks to the seriousness of their demand for safe staffing. And as socialist feminists, we also see the gendered aspects of this issue. Nursing is a feminized profession, and care work is feminized. So we stand in solidarity with our comrades there. We also know that universal health care is a labor issue, and we know that collective worker power will only be stronger when workers can strike without fear of losing coverage for themselves and their families. Anybody who walks out of their job on strike is taking an enormous risk. It's an act of enormous courage. Emma Claire and I have actually been talking about that over the last week or so. And when you consider what's on the line for workers walking out, you know just how serious these discussions are. So again, we will be keeping a close eye on these on this story as it progresses, and we stand in solidarity with New York nurses. You're listening to Revolutions Per Minute here on WBAI, and now I'd love to introduce more fully my guest in the studio here, Emma Claire Foley. So, Emma Claire, you are an organizer with DSA, and you're serving on the organizing committee of our citywide healthcare committee. So, before we jump into some meatier perspectives on our healthcare at the intersections issue today, can you just briefly introduce what the committee does and introduce yourself?
Yeah, thanks, Amy. So what we do as the healthcare committee is we broke off from actually the Socialist Feminist Working Group late last year to really focus on a campaign proposal that we passed at our January meeting this year. So what we've been working on is organizing in New York City to get Medicare for All passed at the federal level, and then at the state level, we're also working towards getting the New York Health Act passed. So our work right now is very focused on these large-scale, like programmatic solutions, and so we'll talk. I'll talk a little bit about that, but then I want to also talk about some of the other work that NYCDSA is doing at the local level around healthcare issues.
Great. Well, I look forward to hearing about it. We have an hour of very interesting discussion ahead of us. And if you're out there in radio land and you don't think this topic is interesting, you've got a bunch of other stations to choose from. So go ahead and leave. Just walk out the door. Okay. So Emma Claire, hit us with your take on the intersection between healthcare and labor activism.
Can do. The way I see it right now, or in the past couple, and even the past couple years, there's been this incredible upsurge of labor organizing and this incredible reclamation of the power that labor has to mm-hmm. improve workers' conditions. We saw that with the teachers' strikes, where healthcare was a major demand, and with all the other strike actions we've been seeing across the country. So you're seeing healthcare as a labor issue where people are approaching it as patients, right? As sort of the captive customer base of the health insurance industry. But then
right.
also you...
So people as individuals advocating for more comprehensive coverage as part of what they're receiving from their employer.
Yes. Yes. That's the framework. But then also if you take a look at the nurses' strike now and similar actions, You're seeing people approach the issue as providers from a labor, but also from a labor perspective. You know, people who do the bulk of the work to actually care for patients, organizing to both improve their working conditions and make the system work better for the people that they're caring for. And then also to return to the case of the teacher's strike, after in West Virginia, after the strike, the conversation quickly became about how the teacher's pay raise that was won would be financed by a cut to Medicaid and other services around, I think, 20 million. It was significant. So you can see how from the other side, you know, there's this cynical use of this idea that it's a zero sum game, right? That all these essential services have to somehow take from each other, right? And so what we're trying to do with these campaigns is move past that and make a real concrete win that will allow labor struggles to move on to the many other urgent issues that they need to be addressing.
Right, and that doesn't pit different sectors of workers against each other.
Absolutely not.
We know that's the oldest union busting trick in the book. So just going back to the issue of the teacher strikes and their demand for healthcare, that's something that is a hot topic in union organizing, is this the approach of the whole worker, you know, seeing the not only are you a teacher, a thing made out of clay in a classroom, you're also most likely a parent. You're also most likely a community member. You have all these other connections and vectors of solidarity between you and the environment that you're working in. And so I think we can also see that and see that teachers have bodies. All workers have bodies. And so healthcare isn't optional in terms of its status as a demand. I think we also see, you know, you it's your phrase here, the captive customer base of the health insurance industry really underscores just how entangled these issues are. Once you start picking at once you start unraveling the rug, so to say, you know, you realize that it's all one big rug. Is that fair?
It's all one big rug.
It's all.
Could not have said it better myself.
One big rug. And what do we think of that rug? I don't like it.
I'm not into the rug. I prefer, just plain floor for me.
Yeah, it's not a good rug. I would like to replace it with something, something else. Great. So can you speak a little bit about, since we are talking about national campaigns and other struggles throughout the country, can you talk a little bit about what you see as driving these national movements for universal healthcare and what we might expect to see over the next, say, 2 to 3 years?
Yeah. So I'd say just very simply, there are kind of two things driving the movement right now. One is that it's becoming more every day, more and more acceptable and more normal to think critically about capitalism, whether even honestly, if you're coming at it from a critical position as a democratic socialist or someone else on the left, or if you're coming at it from the complete opposite direction as someone who feels the need to defend it, it's still becoming clear that people are starting to speak about it as a system and not an inevitability.
Yeah, say if you're like a democratic capitalist, as a certain Ooh. Candidate for president described himself as. Boo.
I think I was caught at the gym watching a segment about how we need to reform capitalism, but at heart it can provide for all of these things, and I was just really struck by, you know, this is everywhere now and everyone's talking about this. So I think that's a really important element. And I also think about healthcare specifically, it's one of the most obvious and universal failures of the market model of providing services, right? You know, mm-hmm. everybody needs healthcare, and I think pretty much everybody knows someone or, you know, has personally experienced the failure of the healthcare system, and that can ruin lives, that can end lives, and we've seen that over and over. So I think these two things are sort of coming together to make this a really important moment for healthcare organizing.
Absolutely. So just to be extra clear, the two things are, one, that everybody's talking about capitalism these days, right?
Mm-hmm.
And two, that, you know, we have a model that conceptualizes healthcare as being part of a market.
Yes.
Right?
Okay. Yes. And that's becoming very, that's very explicit now as something that people are talking about.
Right. And so what alternative model does universal healthcare present that gets away from looking at it as a market?
Essentially what, so speaking about Medicare for All, the sort of the federal level efforts, what we're talking about is a single system administrated by the federal government that is universal, that provides health care for everyone, even including non-citizens, that is comprehensive. It covers all necessary services. And that's the bill specifically that that DSA is supporting, the Medicare for All Act of 2019, introduced by Representative Pramila Jayapal, has, I think, one of the most comprehensive list of services that it does cover. Mm-hmm. So
does it cover abortion?
Yes, it does. I believe it does.
It better.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's also free. It's really free. It's not...
The abortions are free?
Yes. I believe the abortions are free.
Okay.
I feel bad because I can't give you the article that says the abortions are free now, but...
That's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, it's really free though. No, it's not, you know, they won't pay you back. It's not sort of free, but it's free at the point of service.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone can access it. And it, because the healthcare industry is so large and because it does employ so many people, it includes a jobs program. So people who lose their jobs as a result of the transition to a universal healthcare system will have help in finding a new job.
Who are people who might be vulnerable to losing their jobs? Is it like insurance administrators?
Essentially, like yes. Okay. Yeah, there's a large bureaucracy, surprise, that administrates this. And those are the workers that that the program would mostly cover.
And maybe they don't want to be insurance bureaucrats in the first place.
Maybe they'd
rather be watercolor artists or modern dancers. And this could free them to pursue their creative dreams.
If only we could have had a dissatisfied insurance administrator come on and tell us about their watercolors.
Oh, you know what? If you're out there and you're a dissatisfied insurance bureaucrat, please give us a call later when we have our call-ins. We really want to hear from you.
We do.
Okay. Thank you for that summary, Emma Claire. Can you talk a bit about what we might expect in this national campaign and in the national conversation as we're approaching this presidential election in 2020?
Totally, yeah. So speaking about DSA's efforts to organize around this, as you may have heard as a DSA member, the decision to endorse Bernie was recently made. And so a lot of the work that we'll be doing around Medicare for All will be within and sort of beyond that campaign. So the idea is we're in this situation, we're in this process of building power around this issue, right? And so wherever the next kind of endpoint is, whether if it's after the primaries or it's the election, you know, at any case, we'll get there with a big mobilized movement that's ready to fight for better healthcare, whatever that looks like for them.
Mm-hmm.
But we're setting our sights high.
Great. Well, I support that.
Same.
Hey, I wish you the best. So if you're out there and you're just tuning in, I just want to let you know you are listening to Revolutions Per Minute. It is the radio show, weekly radio show of the New York City Democratic Socialists of America. It is a socialist radio show and podcast. We're on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York City, broadcasting at 99.5 FM and streaming on your favorite podcast app. And today we're talking about our struggle for universal health care and what that means in a variety of ways. So I've got a guest here today. This is Emma Claire Foley of the Citywide Healthcare Committee. And we've talked a bit about what we're seeing on the national level in terms of universal healthcare. But because this is the radio show of the New York City Democratic Socialists of America, I'd like to spend the rest of the show focusing on our local organizing and, you know, what's going on in our neighborhoods. So, Emma Claire, What is different or similar about these local, the let's say, should we say New York State or New York City for local?
We can do both.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's say
Big
Ten. Whoa. Oh, she went there. Well, it only took 32 minutes and 42 seconds on the DSA radio show before somebody said it's a Big Ten. So I think that might be a record. So what's the difference between these local campaigns and the national campaign? And what is it like being an organizer in New York City who's focusing on a campaign for healthcare?
It's great. It's a great time. But so locally, and as I said, speaking both at the state level and the city level, and even, you know, even the neighborhood level, DSA's work is addressing the broader issues of health justice as a key issue within labor struggles, within socialist feminism. And as I said before, the healthcare committee did come out of the socialist feminist working group. So that is, that's very visible in the way that it, and then it operates.
Absolutely. Very recently too.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So just a couple healthcare related campaigns that are not this campaign that are going on in NYC DSA.
Sorry, related campaigns that are not which campaign?
Sorry, that are not the healthcare working group's specific campaign for Medicare for All or for the New York Health Act.
Got it.
So there's the strike support for NYSNA that the labor branch, that's the Socialist Feminist Working Group, is doing. But then there's also the Ain't I a Woman campaign that the Socialist Feminist Working Group is working on, which aims to guarantee that home health care workers in New York are paid for every hour of the 24-hour shifts that they often work, rather than the current 13-hour maximum that they can be paid for that, which puts them actually earning below minimum wage.
Right, and these are people who are live in health care workers who have, and
yes,
they're being paid less than minimum wage.
Yes, yes. And so this is just one issue that you can see, you know, it's not just a healthcare issue. It is a labor issue. It's a socialist feminist issue. It's so many different things come to play at this, and that's why it's such a key issue, you know, for the broader health justice goals that DSA has endorsed.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So DSA's health, we want to underline that DSA's work in the field of healthcare isn't limited to the New York Health Act or Medicare for All by any means. There's work going on all across the chapter that is directly addressing a struggle for healthcare justice. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yes.
Great.
Well said.
I try. So we have been, so the title of the show is Healthcare at the Intersection. And the thought behind that is twofold. One, we realize that we are at a pivotal moment in terms of the national conversation. As we said, we are seeing momentum building toward universal healthcare. We're seeing it on the lips of credible presidential candidates, and we have a presidential candidate that we've endorsed in the 2020 primary who is running partially on this issue. So it is a pivotal moment, and healthcare is at a crossroads. But also, we're using the word intersection in the way that it's often used in modern left organizing, which is to reference intersectionality, to reference that we are people with bodies, and that bodies are racialized and gendered. And the existing healthcare system we observe replicates the oppressive structures of society at large. One very poignant example of that is the alarming racial differences in maternal mortality. That's a direct quote from the NIH, the National Institute of Health. They use the word alarming in reference to the racial differences in maternal mortality. And Black women giving birth in this country I can't think of any word other than alarming, because it truly is. They have alarming patient outcomes. This is my observation as Amy Wilson. That's who I am, Amy Wilson. We often speak about healthcare limitations in this country as though they're somehow separate from our culture at large, as though they arose out of nothing. There's a tone of surprise that in a, quote, developed country, black women die of pregnancy-related complications. But we also know, and there's research to support, not only research, but also anecdotal and lived experience to support, that the stress of life in our current white supremacist, patriarchal, xenophobic, and homophobic conditions has a direct effect on the health of the physical body and on life expectancy and outcomes. So when we talk about healthcare policy, we must center those whose bodies are the most directly affected by the current failures of our system. Otherwise, we won't be complete or effective. So you alluded to that a bit in your reference to the other campaigns that we have going on in NDSA. The Ain't I a Woman campaign is an example of that. Would you guess that most of those home healthcare workers are women of color?
Yeah, I would say in my own neighborhood in far South Brooklyn, many of the women who do work as home healthcare workers are from Central Asia, the recent immigrants. And that is the case there. And I believe that's the case everywhere. So this is absolutely an issue that we need to analyze from a perspective of racial justice as well.
Absolutely. And you said it yourself that many of the people that we find working in these underpaid care situations are recent immigrants as well. So there is also a vector there. And you mentioned that under a truly universal healthcare system, healthcare is provided regardless of citizenship status.
Yes.
So that's something that we want to underline as well. So let's talk a bit about the narratives of universal healthcare that we have existing in our political conversation as well, and talk a bit about where they're good, where they're not going far enough. Just give us an overview from a layman's perspective at what we're looking at.
Yeah, so I think I originally wanted just really impress the five principles that I laid out earlier: the single healthcare program that gives comprehensive coverage that's free at the point of service, the coverage is universal, and there's a jobs program. This is the core of what DSA is looking for in a healthcare program that they're that's truly universal. That's truly a program that they would want to support. These are the core demands. The Medicare for All Act in the House that I mentioned, the Jayapal bill does support this. And I believe that DSA's Medicare for All, Nationwide Medicare for All Committee just endorsed the bill that Bernie Sanders will be introducing tomorrow in the Senate, which also conforms to these principles. So with regard to Medicare for America, Medicare for some.
Yeah, Medicare
some
for
some. Medicare.
Medicare for people we kind of like.
Yeah.
We don't like those, right? Those aren't good.
No. Yeah. No, we don't. So these bills don't go far enough. There's incredible pressure to make an incremental improvement which will allow the health insurance industry to essentially continue on as it is.
What?
While still providing coverage for more people, or providing a little more coverage, or something like that, and there, I understand there is this incredible pressure, but if your goal is to provide healthcare and you're making these compromises, what you're essentially saying is that there are certain people who don't deserve healthcare. It's
absolutely
it's more important to preserve this system which provides incredible profit to a very small number of people than to allow some people to live. It's a life or death question. It really is. And
absolutely.
So a Medicare buy-in program, which is what a lot of these are, or the different proposals that are on the table are just unacceptable for anyone who cares about the health of their fellow human beings. It's as simple as that.
It is as simple as that from our perspective here as well. So We will be opening up the phone lines in just a moment, so get your dialing fingers ready. I'll read you the number. But before we move into that, I just want to put the cherry on the sundae of what Emma Claire just underlined. So what are we up against when we're organizing for universal healthcare? This is not a one-sided issue. Should we say it together?
Just what we just said?
What we're up against, the one word that we decided.
Yeah. What is that word?
Okay. It's capital.
It's capital.
Sorry.
It's capital.
And it's...
With a side of corruption.
Yeah.
Corruption.
It's capital with a side of corruption. And the healthcare industry is aligned with many other industries. Like we said earlier, once you start pulling the threads, you realize just how deeply entangled all of these forces are. And so... it is essential that we work in coalition, that we have an intersectional movement on our side, if you will. I like to avoid dualism, but on our side, we need to be firing on all cylinders because we're up against a formidable foe. So we are going to go to the phones. We have about 15 minutes left of the show, so you can call in and talk to us if you'd like. The number here is 212-209-2877. Once again, that's 212-209-2877. Today we are asking the question, how will universal healthcare improve your life? When we achieve universal healthcare, how will your life be better? Oh, we've got a caller.
Wow.
Hello. Oh, hello, caller. You're on with Revolutions Per Minute. How are you today?
Oh, good. I missed a little bit of the first part of the program. Your guest, is she part of a city council committee, health committee?
I'm part of a DSA, a NYC DSA citywide healthcare committee.
DSA,
yes.
Yes, the Democratic Socialists of America.
Sorry, yes.
Oh, okay. I just have a couple of comments and then a question, if I may.
Okay. You got to keep it brief, though,
brother. Well, I've
been
navigating the healthcare system. I've been going out of my mind trying to be on the individual market for about the past 5.5 years. Some of these professional navigator organizations, the leadership is pretty good, but some of these individual navigators are really incompetent and not knowledgeable. Right now, I'm good for now. I'm able to get a Medicare buy-in, and then I'm also able to get the SLMB program for Medicare Part B, and I can buy into Part A. But I'm really worried about the future, what's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Universal health care will take a big load off of my mind, relieve a lot of anxiety. Here's a couple of comments, if I may.
Oh, before you go into your comments, can I ask you your name?
Oh, Bob from Brooklyn.
Oh, hi, Bob.
Hi, Bob.
I'm glad to hear that universal healthcare will improve your life, and I agree that the mental health aspect is one that we've kind of under-discussed, but the anxiety of living uninsured or the anxiety of navigating such a Byzantine system is incredible. It's quite a heavy lift.
Oh, yeah. It's really quite challenging and very causes a great anxiety because, you see, there's maybe some agencies that overlap, but what happens is, there are a lot of people who've fallen through the gaps. For example, if you're trying to get the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, 5 million people in the country cannot qualify for Obamacare because their income is too low.
Absolutely. So absolutely. We know that Obamacare did not go far enough, and that's why we are, I feel like a politician saying Obamacare did not go far enough, but that's why we're here in the campaign that we're working on. And Bob, I do thank you so much for calling, but we do have another caller on the line. So thanks so much for listening to Revolutions Per Minute, and we wish you the best in your in all your health.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Hi, you're on with Revolutions Per Minute. Who am I speaking to?
Yes, hi. Am I on?
You're on. What's your name, caller?
Very good. My name is Zabby. I'm from Suffolk. And I wanted to say that I just love this show that Linda Perry has brought to us. Revolutions Per Minute is great. Thank you so much. And how universal health care, I like calling it Medicare for All because people can understand that better. But in any case, that will expand senior citizen coverage, anyone that has Medicare, to dental, to sight, to eyesight, hearing, and hearing. Those
Absolutely.
Three things are not covered, and senior citizens should get up on their heels and realize that Medicare isn't just okay and covering everything now.
Absolutely. There are huge gaps in the current coverage, and dental is a huge one. Dental
and,
is
and hearing.
Yes. And hearing.
I checked out with everyone, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. I checked out with Bernie Sanders, and although some of the announcements on Democracy Now! Were only for hearing and for or whatever it was, just two out of the three, and I was very upset to hear the two out of the three. And so I called, and they said, oh, no, it's all three. That was just an oversight by the news person who was mm-hmm. reporting that mm-hmm. day. And I mean, the person who was in charge of the bill, even a woman, she did not say the three additional things. Now, this is a good...
Dental, vision, and hearing.
That's right, right. All three.
I'm saying
because,
the things.
You see, we don't want our senior citizens left blind, toothless, and deaf.
Nope.
You're here.
We sure do not. Thank you so much for calling. Thank you so much for contributing your thoughts. We have another caller on the line, so I'll wish you the best for today. Hello, you're on with Revolutions Per Minute. Who am I speaking to?
Gary.
Hi, Gary. How will universal health care improve your life?
It won't. That's the fast answer. But I have to ask you, please, if you could forgive my insolence, but I want to be very quick.
I might forgive your insolence, or I might not. I reserve the right not to forgive your insolence, Gary.
Sure. I have to, with respect, I have to say you're fighting the wrong battle. The medical, first of all, medicine is a monopoly. It's not even an industry. And the issue, and it's in 10%, it's miraculous, like putting on, you know, severed fingers. Another 10% does good job, like in the emergency room. And that's what I think is the thrust of your medical coverage for all. People need emergency care. That's not going to bankrupt them.
Well, with all due respect, Gary, I think everybody here in the studio does disagree with you. So I'm going to let Emma Claire explain her side a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the deeper logic around having a Medicare for all system is that we reduce the need for emergency care.
Mm-hmm.
In a situation where people are delaying getting care because they don't have coverage, or they're worried about being sent to a hospital that doesn't take their insurance or something like that, emergency services are taxed. And in a situation where that's not the case, where people can access the care they need, it will be quite different.
Great. Thank you so much for calling tonight, Gary, and we wish you the best, and we're on with our next caller. Hello, you're on with Revolutions Per Minute. What's your name, please?
Yeah, how you doing? My name is Taylor, calling from Jamaica, Queens.
Hello, thanks for calling.
Yeah, I don't know what that other guy is talking about, but I look forward to universal health care. I happen to have a chronic condition that is breaking my pockets as far as medications and treatments and doctor visits, so health care is a human right. And I can't wait.
Right on.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, right on. Thank you so much for calling in. Yeah, so let's take one more caller. We are on with our next caller. Hello. You're on with Revolutions for... You're not on with Revolutions Per Minute.
Now
you're on with Revolutions Per Minute. What's your name, please, caller?
Hi, my name is Eric from Long Island.
Hi, Eric. How will universal health care improve your life?
I think it's going to improve my life dramatically, although I don't. I currently get private insurance, and I think it's okay. My only concern with it is that when we the tax plan's currently being kicked around, and I know it's all hypothetical, and there's a lot of things that can change. You know, it's going to change the percentage of total federal and state expenditure that the wealthy, the ultra-wealthy in America pay. It's going to change it from, you know, 90-something percent to, you know, potentially 97%, 98%, and it gives them more entitlement, potentially more access, or at least a more logical argument for wielding more power than they already need or have. And that's my only, it's my primary fear.
Absolutely. Well, Emma Claire, can you speak to that just a bit briefly?
Yeah. I mean, I love the way you phrase this, honestly, because it's not, I hear versions of this question or this concern a lot, but never quite phrased like this. And the way I guess I would think about it is, think about how much influence the wealthy have in this country now when they're chronically not underpaying or not paying their taxes. In a situation where the government has a mandate to provide universal health care, not only does that, you know, that mean that we have universal health care, it also means that we've shown that this is a priority, right? And so I think the material win of getting a health program that covers everybody is a meaningful concession, no matter what kind of rhetorical edge that might give someone who's paying quite a bit of taxes. But I share your hope that someday we will have someone actually paying all of their taxes at that rate.
We have time for, thank you so much for calling and contributing that thought. We've got time for one more caller. Do we have a caller on the line?
Yes.
Hello, you're on with Revolutions Per Minute. And sorry, what was your name?
My name is Don. I'm a primary care physician.
Oh.
I was also a member of Physicians for a National Health Program. The way universal health care and Medicare for All would help make my life a little bit more simple is that I have a network of doctors who I know how they're going to take care of my patients. And from one year to the next, I don't know what insurance they take.
Mm-hmm.
I can refer someone who I know for 20 years, and now they no longer take this insurance because the insurance did not negotiate a contract with them that makes their life easier. Second, the paperwork. You have insurance A this year, you have insurance B next year, you have insurance C the third year. I have a lot of senior citizens who this year their co-payments are going through the roof.
Right.
And when you're in a fixed income and your co-payments are going through the roof, you're less inclined to follow some recommendations.
Absolutely. And as we heard from our first caller this evening, the mental stress of navigating our broken healthcare system is not insignificant. So thanks so much for calling, and thanks especially for contributing your perspective as a physician. We really appreciate that. So we've been spending the last hour talking about our campaigns for universal healthcare on the city, state, national level. This has been Revolutions Per Minute, our Democratic Socialists of America weekly show on WBAI. And we'll end the show, as we always do, with some options for you out there in radio land. If you would like to get involved with this campaign, you can. We need you, and everybody is welcome to organize with us. So, Emma Claire, what can our listeners do to join the struggle?
Yeah, so if you're interested in getting involved with the DSA Healthcare Committee, we're having our next monthly meeting on Sunday, April 14th at 7 p.m. And we're also hosting canvases throughout New York City beginning next week, the week of April 15th. For more information about the meetings, about canvases, and about other ways you can get involved, please email us at healthcare.nyc.dsa@gmail.com. And if you're interested in keeping up with NYSNA, and the nurses strike, you can follow them at NY Nurses.
Awesome. So healthcare.nyc.dsa@gmail.com.
Yes, indeed.
Great. Thanks so much for being here with us, Emma Claire. Thank you. All of you for tuning in this week. We'll hope we see you again next week to hear about our fight for universal rent control. Don't forget, rent laws are expiring on June 15th, so the time is now. And thanks again. I'm Amy Wilson, and it's been a pleasure.